Katam. How. Sutayaha. Of a daughter. Pitre. Geha. Kautukam. The festival in the house of her father. Nishamya. Hearing. Dehoho. The body. Suravarya. O best of the demigods. Na. Not. Ingate. Disturbed. Anahutaha. Without being called. Api. Even. Abhyanti. Goes. Suhridam. A friend. Bartahu. Of the husband. Guruho. Of the spiritual master. Dehakritaha. Of the father. Cha. And. Ketanam. The house. Katam sutayaha pitrigeha kautakam nishamya deha suravarya ningate anahuta api abhyanti sauhridam bartur goro deha kritascha ketanam. Translation. O best of the demigods. Oh, if I just, South America, you do it that way first. Okay. Here we do it, whole thing first. O best of the demigods, how can the body of a daughter remain undisturbed when she hears that some festive event is taking place in her father's house? Even though you may consider that I have not been invited, there is no harm if one goes to the house of one's friend, husband, spiritual master, or father without invitation. Okay. O best of the demigods, how can the body of a daughter remain undisturbed when she hears that some festive event is taking place in her father's house? Even though you may be considering that I have not been invited, there is no harm if one goes to the house of one's friend, husband, spiritual master, or father, without invitation. Okay. Tame prasididam amartya vanchitam. What does vanchitam mean? Desire. Kartum bhavam karunika batarhati. Twayatmano hridayam abhadra chakshusha nirupita manugrihana yachita. O immortal Shiva, please be kind towards me and fulfill my desire. You have accepted me as half of your body. Therefore, please show kindness towards me and accept my request. Sri Rishi Uvacha, Rishi Uvacha. The great sage Maitreya said, Lord Shiva, the deliverer of the hill Kailas, having thus been addressed by his dear wife, replied smilingly, although at the same time he remembered the malicious, heart-piercing speeches delivered by Daksha before the guardians of universal affairs. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When Lord Shiva heard from his wife about Daksha, the psychological effect was that he immediately remembered the strong words spoken against him in the assembly of the guardians of the universe. And remembering those words, he was sorry at heart, although to please his wife he smiled. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that a liberated person is always in mental equilibrium in both distress and the happiness of this material world. Therefore, the question may now be raised why a liberated personality like Lord Shiva was so unhappy because of the words of Daksha. Yeah? You want to know the answer? Because he's not really liberated. No, okay. The answer is given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Okay. Lord Shiva is Atmarama, or situated in complete self-realization. But because he is the incarnation in charge of the material mode of ignorance, tamagun, he is sometimes affected by the pleasure and pain of the material world. Okay, so Prabhupada will go on and explain this more. It's a subtle thing about how Krishna relates to this world. Prabhupada says that the Virat Rupa is the objective material incarnation of Krishna. Prabhupada says, of course, Krishna never incarnates as a material object. So the Virat Rupa is kind of like real and not real. Yeah. So, and Lord Shiva is the functional material body of Krishna, right? Yeah. Krishna has to relate to this world, so he doesn't do it himself. He does it through Shiva and Parvati and Durga. So how does that work? How can we relate to Krishna? The answer is given by Vishnu Chakravarti. Okay, yeah. The difference between the pleasure and pain in this material world and that of the spiritual world is that in the spiritual world, the effect is qualitatively absolute. Yeah. Therefore, one may feel sorry in the absolute world, but the manifestation of so-called pain is always full of bliss. Yeah. For instance, once Lord Krishna in his childhood was chastised by his mother, okay, Yashoda, and the Lord cried. But although he was shedding tears from his eyes, this is not to be considered a reaction of the mode of ignorance. For the incident was full of transcendental pleasure. Yeah. When Krishna was playing in so many ways, sometimes it appeared that he caused distress to the gopis. But actually such dealings were full of transcendental bliss. That is the difference between the material and spiritual worlds. The spiritual world, where everything is pure, is pervertedly reflected in this material world. Since everything in the spiritual world is absolute, in the spiritual varieties of apparent pleasure and pain, there is no perception other than eternal bliss. Whereas in the material world, because everything is contaminated by the modes of material nature, there are feelings of pleasure and pain. Therefore, Lord Shiva, although a fully self-realized person, was in charge of the material mode of ignorance. He felt sorrow. Okay. So when we feel that happiness and distress materially is forced upon us, like we don't want it. Yeah. And we don't even the happiness is forced upon us. Yeah. Prabhupada says in material life we always want to be carried away by the waves of sense gratification. You want to eat one ice cream cone that will never end. And the pleasure will just like that one ice cream cone, once you take it, you'll never have to take another or something like that. Or get so intoxicated that we just blow our brains out forever. People drinking and stuff, just trying to annihilate their consciousness. Yeah. But it doesn't work. Yeah. And so it's forced upon us. But it's there. And Lord Shiva is experiencing this out of mercy. He's associating how is Krishna going to understand these things? How is Krishna going to help us? Through Lord Shiva. But Lord Shiva he accepts it, right? Yeah, and doesn't become influenced by it ultimately. The Lord incarnated is Varaha, right? Varaha is a giant peacock, giraffe, gopher, kangaroo. Hog, yeah. And if you ever see the hogs in Vrindavan, they're really stylish. First they got this kind of pompadour hair thing, you know. They got these kind of high heel shoes and stuff on like that. It's like somebody really, in the mode of ignorance, is going out to eat crabs and fish and snails and stuff, and you know, with this questionable female associates, and clothes aren't quite clean, but he really thinks he's... So Lord Varaha thought he really looked really good, you know. There's a famous picture called the boar hunt. It's maybe several hundred years old. And some boar was eating corn in people's fields in England or something. So they went out with the dogs to attack him. And the picture shows about five guys with spears after the boar there, and four or five dogs. You know, one dog's biting his legs, and some other dog. Another dog's lying there with his stomach ripped open. These tusks, you can take a piece of paper and just go on them, razor sharp, you know. These guys are dangerous, yeah, boars. So So anyway, you know, Lord Varaha was thinking, you know, you're lifting the earth, there I look pretty good here, like that, you know, like that. And then Hiranyaksha comes along and says, "Stop, O amphibious beast!" You know, and it says that Lord Varaha was actually pained by these words, like that, you know, a little bit hurt, you know. And he responded by saying, "Yeah, yes, it is. Yeah, yes, it is true that we are beasts of the jungle, and we are used to killing dogs like you." So they exchanged a few insults: pig, dog, you know, like that, back and forth. And they got more enthusiastic to start fighting and so on. You know. So this is it. Krishna accepts these things as vibhava, as spiritual stimulation. And Lord Shiva accepts this in the same way we go. We deal with people, and we're preaching to people, and they actually disturb us. It causes problems. But we accept this. Okay, this is good. Krishna is pleased with me, and I'm actually going to help this person. Right? Yeah. So Lord Shiva is accepting the mode of ignorance, but he's not becoming overcome by it. The same way, Arjuna, Prabhupada said he forgot who Krishna was, but he never stopped loving him. So in the core of his heart, he knew all this is under control, everything else. Draupadi, when all these things are happening, she loses her palace, her husband won't protect her, all these things happening. And so it says that externally she was like complaining to Krishna and different things like that, but she never really lost faith that, you know, Krishna's control is all being controlled. But she was making her complaint about things. Yeah. So it's okay. It's clear how Lord Shiva is hurt. Okay. Next verse. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Who's speaking now? Huh? Lord Shiva is being described as Bhagavan. Okay. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Trayoditam shobanam eva shobane anahuta api abhyanti bandushu. What does shobha mean? We chant it every day in Gaurartik. Jaya Jaya Gaurachandar. Arotika. Shobha. Huh? Brilliant. Like that. Narada Muni tells Vyasa, you've described everything and very logically. You've given the Vedanta Sutra. You've quoted all the histories. But your presentation is not shobha. Right? It's true, but it's not brilliant. You know? Socrates, they were discussing one play. He said, it's very logical, everything else, but it's not, you know, aesthetically pleasing. So I reject it. You know? So he's describing his wife here as shobha. The great Lord replied, that's how Prabhupada translates Bhagavan. The great Lord replied, you know, my dear beautiful wife, you have said that one may go to a friend's house without being invited. You know? And this is true, provided such a friend does not find fault with the guest because of bodily identification and thereby become angry towards him. Purport. Lord Shiva could foresee that as soon as Sati reached her father's house, her father, Daksha, being too puffed up because of bodily identification, would be angry at her presence. And although she was innocent and faultless, he would be mercilessly angry towards her. Yeah, she's a little girl. You know, when daddy starts becoming like this, it's, oh my God, you can imagine. You see, this is going to be like unbelievable if you go there. Yeah. And although she was innocent and faultless, he would be mercilessly angry towards her. This guy's a real cruel guy. Lord Shiva warned that since her father was too puffed up by his material possessions, he would be angry. And this would be intolerable for her. Therefore, it was better that she not go. This fact was already experienced by Lord Shiva, because although Shiva was faultless, Daksha cursed him in so many harsh words. 17. Vidya tapo vita bapur vaya kulahai satam gunai sadbir asatta metarai smritau hatayam brittamana dur drishan Shtabdana pashantihi dhamma bhuyasham. What kind of person can compose such poetry? Although the six qualities, education, austerity, wealth, beauty, youth, and heritage, are for the highly elevated. One who is proud of possessing them becomes blind, and thus he loses his good sense and cannot appreciate the glories of great personalities. Well, okay. It may be argued that Daksha was a very learned, wealthy, and austere, and had descended from a very exalted heritage. How could he be unnecessarily angry towards another? The answer is that when the qualities of good education, good parentage, beauty, and sufficient wealth are misplaced in a person who is puffed up by all these possessions, they produce a very bad result. Milk is a very nice food, but when milk is touched by an envious serpent, it becomes poisonous. Similarly, material assets such as education, wealth, beauty, and good parentage are undoubtedly nice, but when they decorate persons of a malicious nature, then they act adversely. Another example given by Chanika Pandit is that a serpent that has a great jewel on its head is still fearful because it is a serpent. A serpent by nature is envious of other living entities, even though they may be faultless. When a serpent bites another creature, it is not necessarily because the other creature is at fault. It is the habit of a certain serpent to bite innocent creatures. Yeah. So we're going around and so many times people are harassing us and bothering us and insulting us and taking away our facilities and, you know, so many ways, you know. But this is the nature of the material world. Just accept that everybody is being bothered in this material world. In the forest of material enjoyment, it describes different kinds of analogies from nature. And one is the cricket. Yeah. And this is criticism from other people. It says in the material world, everybody is subjected to criticism, untrue criticism like that. Okay? Yes. And you try and find out who told you that. Well, I don't know, I heard from them. Who told you that? Well, I heard it from them. So you look all over your room, you can't find where this stupid cricket is. That's just, you know. It's the same way, you look all over the material world, you'll never find out where the criticism started, you know, who's causing all these problems like that. So this is the nature of the material world. Is it possible to have sweet rice in the material world without a little sand? Most of the time, it's possible to have sweet rice without a little sand. A little burned, rice is a little undercooked, you know, or something. No, it is. It's, you know, dukkhalayam ashashvatam. This is what Krishna says, you can be sure of this world, two things. Dukkhalayam. Yeah, what did dukkhalayam mean? Place of distress. Ashashvatam. Yeah, shashvatam means fixed, ashashvatam. The only thing you can count on this world, in this world, is you can't count on anything. You can be sure that things are not going to go exactly the way you... Anything, once you decide on that, they'll go the way you want them to. Like that. Yeah. God himself is working to make sure this place is uncomfortable. Yeah? Well, I can be happy. You all know Radhika Raman, right? Our good disciple. So he came to me, Guru Dev, Brahmachari, and he said, I think I have to get married, you know, so on. And he said, I'm supposed to be a big scholar. I'm sent all over the place to preach and all these kind of things. He said, but even still, I have this impression that somehow or other I can beat the system, you know. I can have a nice wife and have love, joking relationships with my wife and so many fun things. And she'll laugh at my jokes and they would say what a great guy I am. And, yeah, so on. My kids will worship me. Oh, daddy, you know, like that. Yeah, he said, such a fool, you know. And I said, well, okay, just, you know, chant Hare Krishna for a while and call me back in a week. And he said, I still got this thing. Well, Kardama and Devahuti had this attachment, you know, had this attachment, okay. So I remember as he describes it, he went and met Amrita, They went to South Africa, and the families met and stuff and talking. And you know, before the boy and girl would never see each other at all. They wouldn't see each other before the wedding. But then, you know, she was there with her family, he with his family. They didn't talk. They kind of like looked at each other. And their exchange of glances, as I remember he told me, was that, you know, he looked at her and kind of saying like, "You know this is stupid, right?" And she looked back at him and saying, "Yeah, I know it's stupid, but peace, you know, but we got to do it." Okay, all right, yeah. So that's the best kind of marriage you can hope for, where both parties realize they're idiots, they're getting involved in this, and hopefully we can take some advantage of this, and so we'll never have to do it again, like that, and so on. Yeah, that's it, okay? That's it, you know? That's it, yeah, you know? What is the greatest love story in the world, in the material world? Most famous love story? Romeo and Juliet. How does it finish? She's dead. He's dead. Her brother's dead. His best friend is dead. That's the best love story. So, what is the purpose of Grihastha Ashram? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Yeah. To get ready for Vanaprast. That's it. Yeah. Is that going through it, you know? And you can try it out, you know? But now we have half a brain in our head. I mean, I don't know anybody ever had their first, as a young boy or a girl, you had your first love affair or something. I had my first affair like that, and the girl dumped me. And I had, like, nightmares. I couldn't study. I was having these weird dreams of her being murdered by a guy. It was strange like that. Okay, I'm not going to do that again. Yeah. You think, oh, it's wonderful and stuff. You know, everything else. So anyway, this is what we're talking about here. Yeah. The material world. Yeah. The material world is nothing but a place of ignorance, like a jewel with a snake on his head, or a serpent. And so the snakes go around biting people. That's their job. It's my job, fella. Yeah. Don't blame me. You know. So they go around biting people. Why did that snake bite me? There's no reason why the snake bit you. Yeah. And I mean, sometimes it's just a fact. We cannot find out the reason, you know, why all these problems happen. One of my very close associates, friends, his sister's husband, you know, hung himself, took the kids off to school, went back to the house when the parents were there, went upstairs and hung himself. Said, "I can't take it anymore." And they checked out with the business. There was no money problems. The kids were going to go to college. Everything was apparently fine. Even his wife said he wasn't like depressed or anything, but he just went and hung himself. You know? So they're asking me, well, why did it happen? You know? And again, maybe there is some reason behind it. But the general reason is that this is a prison house. This is a mental hospital. They don't want you to become happy here. Prisoners become institutionalized, right? They like it in the prison and stuff. They want to come back. But they're always pushing to make you go out. Okay. Myself. So the real thing is, how am I making progress? How am I taking advantage of the knocks? Thank you, snake. Thank you, serpent. You know, yeah. I was getting loose, and now Maharishi Pariksit, right? He was becoming attached. Yeah, he was becoming attached to becoming everybody's best friend, helping everybody. So Krishna arranged this little push. Yeah, and he thanked Krishna. Oh, okay. This will give me impetus to get out now, and so on. Okay. The snake. When a serpent bites another creature, it is not necessarily because the other creature is at fault. It is the habit of serpents to bite innocent people. Similarly, although Daksha was qualified by many material assets because he was proud of his possessions, because he was envious, all these qualities were polluted. It is sometimes therefore detrimental for a person advancing in spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness to possess such material assets. Who's a very, very famous example of somebody whose spiritual master took away their assets? Huh? Śrīla Prabhupāda, right? He said, "I was destined to become one of the richest people in India. But my spiritual master saw this wouldn't be good for my spiritual life, so everything, one after another, all these things became failures like that. Yeah? Yes, yeah. So we may see, maybe because we're idiots, we're incompetent people and we can't make money, or maybe because, okay, Krishna sees that your things are becoming a little too opulent here. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Huh? Okay. Kunti Devi, while offering prayers to Krishna, addressed him as Akinchana Gokara. Akinchana Gochara? Kapi. Akinchana Gochara, one who is easily approached by those who are bereft of all material acquisitions. Material exhaustion is an advantage for advancement in Krishna consciousness. Although if one is conscious of his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can utilize one's material assets, such as great learning and beauty, an exalted ancestry for the service of Lord Krishna. Then such assets become glorious. In other words, unless one is Krishna conscious, all his material possessions are zero. Yeah? But when this zero is by the side of the Supreme One, it is at once increases in value to 10. Okay? Unless situated by the side of the Supreme One, zero is always a zero. One may add 100 zeros, but the value will remain zero. Unless one's material assets are used in Krishna consciousness, they may play havoc and degrade the possessor. Yep. Okay. So any questions or comments? Anybody have any experiences of this? Know any examples of people who had great material assets, caused them problems, or they were able to use it for Krishna? In ISKCON, anybody using their material assets for Krishna? Huh? Yeah, Ambarish Das. Yeah. I forgot how much money he makes a day. Something like, you know, $500 a day or something. $1,000 a day. More than that. It's more than that. I think it's more than $1,000 a day is his income. Like that, you know, like that, maybe like $5,000 a day. Yeah, yeah. And I had some association with him, and he said it actually was a curse, you know, because all this money is there, and he said he had to work every day to see the money was being engaged in Krishna's service, and you know, he was funding different projects, and he had to see the reports and see how it was being used, and he felt, you know, peaceful. If not, the money would start to talk to him, Amrish. What is it? You've been working hard. You deserve a vacation. Yeah. And just yesterday, that travel agent called you up, and you could take your family for like a 10-day cruise in the Bahamas, like that and stuff, and get some fresh air and rest and relax and be rejuvenated for more service. Yeah, okay. Ambarish. What is it? Remember your cousin's cousin's nephew who needs money for surgery for cancer? Oh, yeah. So, you know, if you win the lottery, you'll discover all your family tree. Everybody who has any kind of relationship will call to you, you know. Yeah. And then what, you can't walk around safely anymore, right? If you were worth $5 million or $50 million, right, you think your life would be peaceful? No, your parents get a envelope with your ear in it saying, unless you want some more of these things, give us $1 million right away. You know, it's just terrible. It's just unbelievable. Everybody's approaching you smiling, but you just think, you know? Very difficult. Chanika Pandit says, the king has no friends. Right? Anybody who thinks he's a friend of the king is a fool. You can translate that into ISKCON talk. The temple president has no friends. Anybody who thinks he's a friend of the temple president is a fool. Yeah? As soon as you take this title, everybody looks at you in terms of what they can get from you, even your own wife. Prabhu, my friend's husband is... Yeah. It's a natural reaction. Again, Shiva will be influenced by the material nature. Okay, if you're a devotee, okay, you understand what's going on and you can use it. You can use it properly. You can understand, if I'm going to become president, I'm going to have to become neutral to everybody. And we'll be able to have friends and say, yeah, it's good, you're right, you should have that and this and that. Because no, now I've got this position, I have to be neutral even to my best friends and so on. Yeah. So this is the material nature. Yeah. When we use it for Krishna, okay. Yeah. It may not come to the point where it's blissful, but at least it won't contaminate us. And we'll see that I'm liberated, I'm using these things, and it's good. And by doing this, eventually I'll develop some kind of bhava, you know, actually penetrate enough where using the wealth and the beauty and all these things are great. Any other examples? Any examples of devotees you know who became totally puffed up by their position? Wealth, prestige, yeah, good looks, beauty, the mirror, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the most beautiful in the temple hall? It's you. Yes, Snow White. Snow White. Coffee brown. Yes. One of my friends, Yajnavalkya Das, he was a brahmachari, you know, in the beginning of ISKCON in Boston. And there was nobody to lead Mangal Arati. He said, okay, I'll lead it and stuff. He started chanting. He told me this and that, you know. Then he was getting really good kirtan while leading a really enthusiastic kirtan. And he said he thought, wow, I bet all the brahmacharinis are looking at me. His mind was thinking, well, the brahmacharinis are probably all looking at me and what a great kirtan I'm leading, you know. So he kind of looked over, and all the brahmacharinis were kind of like this. He looked down, and his dhoti had fallen off, right? And stuff. And so on. So he grabbed it and ran out, cursing Krishna. Like that. You rascal, Krishna. So Indra says that, right? Indra was becoming puffed up by being the Indra, king of the gods and stuff. And so Krishna, you know, chastised him. So in his prayers, Indra says, this is what happens, is that, you know, you accept everybody's service, but when somebody becomes a little proud, you find some way to cut down their pride without hurting them. So he felt, in some ways it was kind of funny, you know, and stuff, you know, he was, okay, you know, Brahmacharini, you know, whatever, okay. So Krishna does that. He'll find different ways that if we're a little bit sensitive, okay, Krishna did that, yeah, it's a message, okay, calm down, you know. You got this money, but hey, other people, you know, also have money or something. What are you doing with it? Yeah, and so on. Yeah, yes. The example is I was in Mayapur temple, and everybody's chanting. Maybe like, what is it, like 1,000 people chanting Japa or something. Maybe, I mean, maybe 600. And I looked up, and the most beautiful woman I've ever seen was walking across the front of the temple room, and I was looking at her. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Then Krishna says, your intelligence says, hey, fella, oh, yeah, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. No. So that was the inauguration of this festival they had for the 500th anniversary of Lord Chaitanya's sannyas. They had a whole traveling like that. And she was, what is it, Miss Universe India? Like, that was who she was. Like, the supreme personality of womanhood. She was like Miss Universe India. Okay. And she was there with some other senators, what do you call them, like Lok Sabha people, for the inauguration like that. This is kind of the extreme example of Yukta Vairagya, that Miss Universe India has come to inaugurate the sannyas anniversary of Lord Chaitanya. Who knows? There she was. Yeah. Yeah. But it was other people too. Yeah. Other people too. Yeah. But she was, and she said, she gave a nice speech, and she, other people too. And she said that when she was a small girl, her grandmother used to take her to all these pilgrimage places and always read stories to her about Krishna, Leela, and all these things, you know. And so then she's growing up, and then she won Miss something gown or something like some, her village beauty competition. She won it like that, you know. Maybe 12 years old, 13 years old. Then she won the sub-district competition. Then she won the district competition. And then she thought, hey, maybe I can go all the way. You know, okay, yeah. You know. And she did. She went up. And I guess and they come down to maybe like the final 7 girls out of all of India. And the lights are going like this and that. And everybody. And it is you! And the other 6 girls all step back and smile like that. Congratulations. And you're the lucky one. You deserve this. Yeah. Yeah. And so then she said, like, you know, it was thrilling. I won. But then they stuffed this, you know, bunch of roses in her thing, and they hadn't cut the thorns off. So she's being poked in the breast by these roses like that, and all these lights are burning in her face, and she has to go on smiling like that, you know, like that. And she said the thrill lasted for even like less than 1 minute. It was like this thing, and then one thing after another, God, you know. But she said exactly this, that I can use this now, you know, for good causes. I can go places and draw attention to things like this. And so I use it like that and so on. So she had this background as a devotee, and she saw what it was worth and so on. So she became influenced, you know, for a little bit. Lord Shiva becomes influenced. We may become influenced. One time in a temple in San Francisco, which used to be a mortuary, the second story in the back where we cut the subji up, it was a room like this. It was kind of tilted, and there was a hole in the bottom, so that was where they drained the blood out and, you know, embalmed the corpses and stuff. So we were cutting vegetables. We had this place like had mice. So we had this like a place with like a metal, you know, called this screen type stuff to keep the mice out, to keep the vegetables there. But one mouse had gotten in like that. So Jayananda, who was this big self-realized guy, was trying to catch the mouse, you know. And all of a sudden he goes, ah! You know, it's like that. He said, he ran across my foot, you know, so on, you know. So yeah, even he was, you know, being influenced. So it's not unusual, you know, to be influenced by the material world, you know, being anger and happiness and distress and pride. It's not unusual, especially if we're going into it for Sankirtan purposes. If we're not completely purified, yeah. And if we are very purified, but then we go as Sankirtan, it's not unusual to be disturbed when you're in Sankirtan by people spitting on you or insulting you. Yeah. Prabhupada would come back from his preaching activities. And the neighbors would say, and he would come back, and he had you know, very little results, and he would come back and sit down, and they'd watch him across in the balcony. He would sit there like this, you know. Then after some time, he would go back and put his intelligence back in order. Foundation is still solid. And he would get up, and he would take a bath and cook prasad and have some kirtan and stuff like that and so on. So he saw many times Prabhupada would come back like, you know. He said when he was in New York, almost every few days, I would go down and look at the schedules on the boats and see which boats were departing and thinking, you know, okay, I'll try a little bit longer and so on. You know? So it's a very, very natural, you know. But the more we build our foundation in Krishna consciousness, that doesn't become disturbed. Madhavendra Puri, he got a pot of milk from Gopal, right? He was waiting for this cowherd boy to come back so he could give him his pot. And he finally fell asleep, you know, and so on. But he didn't go into the mode of ignorance, right? His body went to sleep, his mind went to sleep, but his intelligence didn't go completely to sleep. It's like the operating system in a computer, right? How many engineers are software engineers, right? Yeah. You got the operating system, right? So part of the CPU becomes occupied by the input-output apparatus, part of it becomes operated by this math processor, but a part of it, the operating system is always hanging out there somewhere, right? Because without that, we're in a lot of trouble, you know, so on. Yeah, so that's what happens, is that if a mode of ignorance can enter in, the body goes to sleep, the mind goes to sleep, the intelligence goes to sleep, but a little bit of it is always Krishna conscious, the basis is there. So when Prabhupada woke up, it wasn't like, you know, where am I, what's going on, where's the clock, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. No, he was immediately just, you know, go back to work where he was precisely before, like that, and so on. Yeah. So nice examples of, you know, of the external energy and Lord Shiva. Yeah. And of course, what's sati? Sati is what? Sati is really wants to go to the house. She really wants to go see the party. No, not really. Yeah, she wants, because she's the mother of the universe. And Daksha is her son, so she wants to go and like make sure things are being carried on properly like that. So she doesn't. In one aspect, she remembers who she is, but the other aspect, she's acting out this whole thing of the material world and acting like an attached young girl and agitating her husband's mind and so on. Yeah, yep. Happens with you? Nope. Your wife agitates your mind. But same time, too, everybody knows, even the family affairs, everybody knows. I'm acting like a woman, but I know I'm not identifying. I'm like a man. Well, let's let it run. Let's see. You know, this is our grihastha ashram. Okay, we got to do this. Okay, let's let it run and see what happens. Okay, and you know, Susie's not going to go to the big dance with Billy. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, any questions or comments here? Yes. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Maharaj, would you like to tell us how you met Iskcon and where you met Prabhupada?
Oh, my God. Okay. I met Prabhupada through his books. You know, so many people. Again, I made this statement that Prabhupada said, I will live forever. Prabhupada is personally present in his books. So I was at the University of California, Davis, during Whole Earth Day, and it was actually inaugurated there. And one devotee, Brahmacharya, may have been Bodhi Manta, was all in dhoti and kurta and selling books, you know. And he was trying to sell me a book and sales techniques. And I was doing some kind of yoga then where you're supposed to blank your mind, you know. Okay, so I was like, trying to blank my mind. He was talking. And he wanted, it was a big Krishna book, when it was two volumes like that. He wanted $10. It was like 1972, 82, 92, 2002, 2012. Maybe it would be like $40 now. How much is a big Krishna book now? It's expensive, right? Yeah. It's not $10. Hopefully not. Yeah? Wow, our books haven't increased with the... Yeah. Yeah, these are the big ones. The big ones, yeah. So anyway, it was a fair amount of money, you know. And I was married then. My wife was sitting there like glowering at me like, you know, you're going to waste our money on more of these stupid yoga stuff, things like that, and so on. You know. It was very much like, you know, and so I really had to make this choice between Maya, you know, and Krishna. You know, and it wasn't like gratification, but when I got home, I knew I would get the, you know, criticism. And really it was a choice. I had to make the choice, you know, so. And I was really realizing what he was saying was true and everything else. So finally, okay, I'll do it and bought the book, you know. And then I read it for 1 year. And I mentioned this before that, well, one thing is that every philosophy I come in contact with, Prabhupada talked about them all, put them all in perspective and their advantages and disadvantages, and really established that monotheism is the most sane, practical, intelligent process like that. Okay. The other thing that really impressed me, the pictures impressed me too. Jadarani's art, the original Krishna books, it was very kind of primitive, but it was just like intense. It was like some kind of surreal, you know, thing. The third thing was, and I mentioned this, at some point I was sitting there on the porch. I still remember sitting on the porch of this house where we were sharing with other college students. And suddenly it just hit me. You know, because I'd read a lot of science fiction, Clifford Simic, Heinlein, all these really just incredible like things and so on. You know? And Prabhupada was describing the Bhagavatam, he was describing again Jarasandha attacked Mathura with 18 Akshahinis and thousands and millions of soldiers, and Krishna came out with his army and they were chopping off heads, arms, legs, and there was blood everywhere, and Balaram was becoming couldn't control himself. He came out and created a tidal wave. And the dead elephants looked like islands, and the jewelry looked like sand, and the heads were floating like tortoises. And, you know, it's like, oh, it was like, anybody who sees this will never be bothered by so-and-so. And it was just like all these incredible, you know, activities and benedictions, you know. But Prabhupada, who was completely sober, intelligent guy, was describing all of this like reality, you know. And so then at one point in my mind, I mentioned this, said, this is either the biggest lie you ever read, or else it's the absolute truth. Then my intelligence said to my mind, either it's an absolute lie or the absolute truth. But either case, it's absolute. Yeah. And I was realizing, yeah, the Krishna is self-evident. And all other evidence depends upon him. So the Krishna book is Krishna. At that point, I realized, yeah, this is not anything like anything I ever came in contact with before. Yeah? So it's kind of what I was praying for, sincerely like that and so on. And then finally going this way and that way and trying to understand it. And then I was, I understood it was a temple in San Francisco. So I finally went there and knocked on the door. You know, Brahmacharya opened it about 2 o'clock. I said, we're closed, come back later. Okay, thank you. All right. So I went out, sat in my car, opened my Krishna book, and Prabhupada said, If one experiences difficulties in progressing in spiritual life, he should not be deterred, but should continue with patience. Okay. I'm sure everybody in this room has had the experience that Prabhupada talks to you and stuff. Okay. So I sat there for 2 hours and went back. And then the devotee received me and nice, gave me some prasadam and sold me a couple books and so on. So I started going to the temple. And of course, you meet Prabhupada through his disciples, through people who are following it. Sometimes we're just following it like iron filings follow a magnet. We don't have any realization, but we're just like, you know, what's it called? It's a power attachment or something, you know. But yeah, it was a whole different experience, you know, the temple. I met Vishnu Janan. That was an incredible experience, you know, and so on. And then finally, the Rath Yatra came. I moved in about 2 blocks away from the temple. It was a tough area, and so we're living there. And I came over, for Rath Yatra, they had, I don't know, 25,000 flowers or carnations or something. So I sat with maybe 6 more people in the garage, and we're making these flower garlands, right, the carnations. And I had a little groove in my finger the next day, like that. And everybody else went off to see Prabhupada, and I didn't know who he was exactly and stuff. And some of us stayed making garlands. Okay. Then Rath Yatra. Then, the next day after the Rath Yatra, everybody was recovering. And Prabhupada was sitting like that, you know. But I was sitting over there, on just like, you know, next to him, looking at the deities. And he was lecturing. And I looked at Gornatai, and their whole bodies were conscious. Just like if you drop your wallet and I grab it, and you come back and you're looking at everybody, did anybody see my wallet? I won't look at your eyes. Their whole bodies were like that. Their whole bodies were conscious. It was like they wanted to hear Prabhupada's lecture. Other times, you know, different contact indirectly and so on, like that and so on. You know. But the main thing is through service. Prabhupada's saying, as soon as we're associating with a person's desires, and how do you associate with a person's desires? By trying to satisfy them. And that's the material world. You know, Krishna is desiring, and we try to satisfy those desires, then we know Krishna. You know Prabhupada, everything else, you know, so on. So it's some of my experiences. Part of the Virat Rup. Not part of the spiritual world. It's just like, is it required to choose a body? Yeah, we have some choice, but you're going to have to choose somebody. You know, if you don't choose it, it'll be forced upon you, and maybe because of your past activities, it'll be forced upon you. Human body, horse body, tiger body, male body, female body. So Varna Ashram is a part of the Virat Rup, the universal form, like that, which composes everything, like that. And just like water, earth, fire, air, ether, the demigods, you know, their bodies are a part of this. Yeah. So that's just the way the world works. And so we're going to end up either by choice or something in some kind of situation. Kirata hunandra palinda pulkasa abira shamba abira yavana kashai dayaha. There are many uncivilized species also. But they fit into like different, you know, fundamental situations and so on, you know. And it's like, you know, some of my disciples, they're brahmacharis, whatever, going on. And then they want to get into this grihachari ashram, or this brahmastra ashram, where they are neither brahmacharis nor grihastas. And then they become easy targets for the witch. Whap! Because you're not protected by your ashram situation. If you're running around, you know, if he goes into a liquor store to buy alcohol, the guy would probably say, fellow, you sure you want to buy this? Even most idiot would kind of figure out, like, maybe this is not something somebody dressed like that should be, you know? Or if some grihasta, right? You know, he's going to some temple function, this and that, And you know, he walks back over, and his wife says, you know, you're talking to some Mataji. He walks back to his wife, and she says, having a lot of fun with her, right? Joking a lot, huh? Oh, my God. You know, so you know, husband and wife both, you know, husband's watching me, wife's watching me, you know, and some of this is good, you know. A lot of times men are so such idiots, they can't figure out that a woman's after them, right? They don't notice it. But the woman can see, this woman's got eyes for my husband. You know? Yeah, you know. The same way, too. Women don't realize when guys are joking with them. And, you know, so it's like, okay, so you're protected in that situation. And, you know, so that's why there are different ashrams. And if we participate with this, you know, then we're participating with Krishna's, you know, system, and we're protected like that and so on. So yeah, it's usually good to find, you know, if you're going to be a brahmachari or be a grihastha or be a vanaprastha or be a sannyasi, right? But don't be a grihachari. Yeah. And otherwise, in brahmachari ashram, okay, there's certain, you know, facility for making money for the temple and everything else, but it shouldn't be in your bank account, right? Should be a temple bank account where you're organizing some program and you're managing, you know. And maybe it's more like, you know, maybe you have to associate with ladies a little bit more and secretaries and ladies and projects and organizing. And it's a little bit more like, you know, towards grihastha ashram, but it's not grihastha ashram. You know? There's like, in India, for example, you have like sannyas ashrams. In Naradananda ashram, you can be a sannyasi and live for free in these really simple places like that, and so on. But the rule is, after sundown, no ladies. As soon as the sun goes down, no ladies can be in at all like that. During the daytime, they can be coming and taking advice and asking questions or, you know, things like that. You know, so there are certain rules which describe the way things work. And then you follow those, you're happy. You start not following them, you're going to get different kinds of reactions, which are also predicted like that. And so on. Okay? Okay. So I guess kind of... is the ultimate question. Here we go. Yeah.
You're talking about how everyone living in this world has to go through problems.
Yeah.
And at times there are problems that it's almost like a crisis.
Yeah.
And we're talking about people who are not necessarily in association with devotees or who are just starting to associate.
Yeah.
And when such crises come, sometimes they fully take Krishna consciousness or they just completely leave. So,
yeah. One time, Mula Prakriti Devi Dasi, she asked Prabhupada during one darshan, how can we tell if somebody's that fall down was accidental or because of offensive behavior? And she said, Prabhupada kind of thought for a while, and he said, if they come back, it was accidental. Like that, you know. So that's it. There's two things going on. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there's two things going on. One is our karma. The other is our commitment to honesty. This is how he's defining devotional service, how you're committed to the truth. And they're totally independent. You know, you can be a very, very advanced devotee and you can end up being a cow or a dog or a cat or a bull, right? And yeah, but you don't go through it the same way as an ordinary person. You go through it with perspective and stuff. But yeah, as long as little attachment, Maya can take you through any body, but she can't make you identify with it. So same way, if somebody is becoming a devotee, there are different reasons. And at some point, you know, it may be because of their karma. It's, karma is strong. They don't have sufficient pious activities. You know, Shrimbatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanana Hridyanti Sto Badrani Vidunoti Suritratam. There's three kinds of pious activities. Pious activities for sense gratification, going to heaven, enjoying ice cream. Pious activities for liberation. And pious activities for advancing in devotional service. You know? So the cowherd boys were only allowed to play with Krishna with intense absorption after accumulating piles of pious activities. You know? So somebody who doesn't have sufficient, you know, transcendental pious activities, when the heat gets on, they may just fall away and stuff. You know? Yeah. Yeah, many examples of this with a seed being planted, right? If the seed's planted in good soil, it grows very well. If it's planted on some rocks, it sprouts and just dies in the sun. You know, the Bible gives exactly the same analogy. Yeah, so on. And the other thing is, yeah, maybe they made the choice. You know, Bharata Maharaj went all the way to this crisis of being attached to a deer, and he then, you know, became attached. And in the text it says it was because of his previous activities, and Prabhupada says in the purport, no way. He was in the platform of bhava. At that point, there's maya cannot, you know, trick you. So he made a conscious intention to try and become everybody's dearmost friend, you know, and stand in Krishna's way like that and so on. So two things. Sometimes it's our free will, and sometimes it's just things are tough. And when the crisis is over, they'll come back like that. And they'll get stronger. You know, acquire more activities. And next time the crisis has come, they'll make it through. Okay. So, Prabhupada ki jai. Ekadasi vrata ki jai. Tonight we'll talk about Carl Jung and how to control your mind. Hare Krishna. So, Prabhupada ki jai.